This is the Smallmouth Crush Podcast Season 2. If you're a hardcore angler, you've come to the right place. We'll interview some of the top local and regional anglers in North America. Anglers who consistently finish near the top in both largemouth and smallmouth bass fishing tournaments. Travis and his guest will discuss techniques and strategies used to help these anglers stay so consistent and help you become a better angler and gain an edge on your body of water. And now, here's your host of the Smallmouth Crush Podcast, Travis Manson.
Hello, and welcome to the Smallmouth Crush Podcast. My name's Travis Manson. I got another great guest, another exciting week talking fishing. We're talking with some of the top regional and local anglers across North America. Of course, we have to talk about the real shot. The real shot, they got everything, whether it be hunting, fishing, walleyes, bass, salmon, trout, you name it. But they got a huge selection of bass tackle. Top brands like Mega Bass, Jackal, Evergreen Z-Man, Daiwa, Shimano, Dirty Jigs, Kitex, Guggen's. They even got Guggen baits. I haven't tried them yet, but I'm sure they're good. St. Croix rods, all kinds of stuff and so much more. Head on over to therealshot.com. You can use my code SmallmouthCrush15. Listen, that's 15% off your first order. That's a no-brainer. Same-day shipping, oftentimes free shipping. Go check out therealshot.com for your next tackle purchases. We certainly appreciate it here, and we appreciate the support from The Real Shot as well. Let's see if our guest is available. And just like that, Andy, what's going on back there, man? You got technical difficulties?
Yeah, you know, it's always something, right?
I hear you, man. Listen, super excited. We got a little different theme going for season two. And so, of course, we talked with some top smallmouth anglers across the country. In season two, we're actually talking with some top smallmouth and largemouth, spotted bass, just the dudes that know how to get it done. And you definitely know how to get it done when it comes to the tournament scene. But before we dig into all these questions I have for you, I'd like you to take a few minutes to perhaps talk a little bit about yourself, a little bit of background, where your home body of water is, what's your style of fishing, and some of the success you've had in the past.
Sure. Well, first of all, I appreciate you having me on. It's a good opportunity, and I really do appreciate it. I'm from central Missouri. Lake of the Ozarks is my home lake. You know, around here, we kind of do a little bit of everything except fish grass. There's no grass in this place. It's been a good place to cut my teeth because it's full of fish and, you know, you can do a lot of different techniques and kind of hone your skills across the board, like I said, except grass. Mm-hmm. So, you know, as far as what I like to do, I just like to catch them, you know,
right.
It doesn't matter to me. I guess if I had a choice, you know, I like to put the trolling motor on high and go, you know, it is just however they're biting. That's what I'm going to do.
Cover water, power fishermen. It's a unique fishery, very diverse. There's a lot to it. I know it doesn't have grass, but just being able to pattern these fish and stay on them. Would you consider that more of a pattern lake, or is it a spot on spot type of lake, or is it a little bit of both?
It's for sure a pattern lake. A lot of places I go are definitely spot lakes where, you know, I feel like you could, you know, there's the fish are in spots. They're not everywhere. And you really have to be in those spots, those small areas to catch them. Whereas Lake of the Ozarks, if you get on a bite, you can literally run from, you know, for 90 miles of this lake plus all the tributaries, and every cove you pull into has the potential to win. For a lake to be a good pattern lake, it has to have a lot of fish in it. And then this one certainly does.
Where do you do most of your damage?
Most of my fishing, you know, is here at Lake of the Ozarks. I live, you know, 10 minutes from two different ramps. But, you know, here recently, I've kind of started to go other places and, you know, and I've had some really good success. This was my first year fishing the whole Toyota series, and I actually got a win on Grand Lake.
Did you see similarities from, you know, Lake of the Ozarks to Grand Lake that you kind of brought over and utilized it maybe in practice or finding that winning pattern or deal that you were on, or is it totally different?
It's similar to Lake of the Ozarks with the docks and all that stuff and kind of the way it sets up. It's got kind of a clear lower end and then more staying up the arms. The different thing about Grand that I've had to learn is the fish aren't always on a piece of cover. Here, you know, most of the time they're either on, you know, a big rock or a log or a dock or something. There, if you're in an area that you know has fish, you kind of just got to figure out what they're on that day, because they could be on just nothing, just gravel, mm-hmm. just dirt, just whatever. And that's kind of been the hardest thing for me to adapt to, is just to figure out that lake is kind of more of a spot lake, like you were talking about. Areas will have fish or have the right fish in them. You could catch them off 5 or 6 different types of cover in that area, and you just got to fish it all.
Mm-hmm. How about as far as smallmouth, largemouth, spotted bass? There's both, all three species there, correct?
In Lake of the Ozarks?
Yep.
Yeah, we don't have a very big smallmouth population. You got to run up into the tributaries. Mm-hmm. But I do a lot of smallmouth fishing. We have some friends that own a camp up in Ontario. And so we, up until the pandemic, we went up there every year, every 2 year type of deal. Just shield lakes and, you know, just go up there for a vacation and
go have some fun. Yeah.
Yep. And then, you know, recently this early fall, I took a trip to, Lake Champlain and the St. Lawrence River, because they're both on the, pro circuit schedule next year. Mm-hmm. Smallmouth are, they kind of, I don't know if come natural to me is the right word, but I always have a good time fishing for them. And it seems like I can catch them pretty good.
Sure.
Most places I've been. So
feels natural, I think, because of just the areas that they hang out in and live in is probably very similar to the stuff that you're used to fishing every day for largemouth, I would imagine. Yeah,
they like, you know, rocky shoals and stuff like that. And, you know, I here at Lake of the Ozarks, you know, it's a big brush pile lake and dock lake and all that, but I tend to key on rock. And so, you know, that might be part of it. And, you know, down at Table Rock, where I've spent quite a bit of time, they do have a big smallmouth population down there. So they're a different animal than those northern fish for sure. And I think they're all different animals compared to St. Lawrence fish, goby eaters. Mm-hmm. But, you know, smallmouth are just, they're so much fun to catch. I mean,
right.
You know, once you pursue them once, you just want to go catch them all the time. I've been to a few of the TVA lakes and places like that. I fished the All-American on Hartwell last year. So slowly but surely, I'm kind of getting my feet wet all over the country.
So do you prefer, when you look at your tournament schedule and you see tournament schedules coming out, when they're on Lake of the Ozark, you feel right at home and you're ready to go?
Oh, yeah. 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 I like seeing Lake of the Ozarks on any schedule for sure.
So a guy like you that spends so much time on that body of water, what are you doing as far as tournament prep, or are you pretty much dialed in based on seasonal patterns, or are you actually, there's probably a tournament there every weekend. Now, I don't know if you jump into a tournament every weekend, but are you putting more emphasis on some of the larger events, or are you just hopping into as many as you can?
As many as I can. A lot of the smaller ones that, you know, I don't practice for or anything like that. Mm-hmm. The bigger events, I put a lot of time into them and do a lot of practice. And I'm not one to kind of rely on seasonal patterns or any of that. I just try to go out and let the fish tell me what they're doing, or, you know, kind of figure out why they're going to be somewhere, you know, where the bait is. You know, for instance, this time of year, you know, everybody thinks in the Ozarks, you know, you throw a top water, it's going to be one shallow, you know, because that's where the big gizzard shad are and all that. But we had a tournament this past Saturday with 216 boats, and I think we finished 7th. And I caught a couple of those fish out of 30-foot water. Hmm. So it's just one of those things where I'm always just trying to figure out if I can find something different that maybe a lot of guys aren't doing, then I feel like that's the way you win a lot of times.
So locating a little different deal, a little different, I don't want to say pattern, but just what those fish are keyed into for that time of year. Speaking of seasonal patterns and being able to fish the lake, you're fortunate. You know, a lot of us northern guys, we don't get to fish the whole year. Obviously down there, it's a year-round deal. I'm curious, what's your favorite time to fish down there?
Typically December, January, really the entire winter, because typically December is my favorite time of year. The water starts getting down into the 40s and, you know, the fish really start to group up. I don't know how familiar anybody watching this is with Lake of the Ozarks, but it's a place unlike anything you've probably ever seen, just with the number of big ocean cruisers, for lack of a better term. You know, it's highly developed, thousands and thousands and thousands of docks, and all these docks have big, giant cruisers, you know, 40 to up to 60 footers. So wintertime is kind of, we get a reprieve from that, and we kind of get to be able to run around the lake at, you know, more than 40 miles an hour. So it's kind of,
it's that bad during the summer months, just with boat chop and wave action.
Yeah. It's unbelievable. Wow. I mean, it's hard to explain it to people that haven't seen it, but it's, like I said, I've been a lot of places now, and you know, a lot of these places are big and get rough from wind, but you know, we got 5 footers that are going every direction like a washing machine. You know, it's kind of hard to time those out.
It's crazy. I can't imagine thousands of docks with boats and they're just out having fun.
Yeah, it's, I was out yesterday and people were still jet skiing.
Right.
It's crazy.
How would you go about practicing or keying in for an event during those peak times in, say, you know, June, July, August, when there's a lot of activity on the lake? I want to say that to me, it would seem the fish would shut down, but at the same time, they must be used to that as well, right?
Yeah, these fish here are used to it. It's bad enough. We don't have events. Usually our season will start in maybe late February and then, or early March, and then it's done usually by the time May rolls around until September, because the boat traffic is so bad. They have night tournaments during the summer, but as far as big events, there's really rarely a big tournament during the summer months here. It's too dangerous.
I got to ask, these night tournaments, is that something you do on a regular basis?
You know, when I first started, I did, because it's a lot easier to trick a big one at night. But, you know, anymore, I guess it's just age getting to me. But I don't really care for being out there after dark with all those people running around. We got a lot of bars on the water.
Sure.
Right. I'd rather not take my chances.
That always fascinates me, the night tournament deal. You know, we don't get to do a whole lot of that. We do run into the late evenings, you know, in the summer months where weigh-in would be 9:30, 10 o'clock, but we never went way into the wee hours of the morning. What would be a typical nighttime deal on that type of body of water? What would you be focused on if you were fishing those tournaments at night?
So here at Lake of the Ozarks, like I said, it's kind of a special place. A lot of times for the night tournaments here, you kind of focus on light. Like I said, there's a lot of bars, there's a lot of restaurants, marinas, all that sort of thing on the water. And all these places have lights. And so those lights attract bugs. And obviously, that, you know, that starts the food chain. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times night fishing, I would focus on light. You know, I throw big baits, but you throw big dark colored baits, typically slow moving baits, you know, something on the bottom, a worm or a big jig or something like
okay.
that. A big spinner bait's good too, a chatter bait, just dark, big profiles. Typically we key on light around.
Gotcha.
Here.
So your favorite time to fish is during the winter months. I got to know, like, what is some of the techniques that you're going to be using, you know, to catch these fish that time of year?
For me, I love to throw jerk bait. So if I can catch them doing that, that's what I want to do. A lot of the tournament circuits around here don't allow the Alabama rig anymore. Mm-hmm. There's a few that do, but most don't. So that's kind of nice, because you can go out there and, you know, I can go throw a jerk bait all day and not think, you know, man, somebody's going to catch 25 pounds on that A rig and, you know, it's going to be a problem. So, but a jerk bait, you can catch them on a crankbait pretty much all through the winter here. There's times where the water will dip down into the mid 30s and then it's pretty tough to catch one cranking. But a jig, and of course the Alabama rig. It kind of narrows down your options, which is also nice. It's a really fun time of year to fish. Like I said, it's my favorite.
I know you guys down that way love throwing the jerk bait. I'd love to hear your setup when it comes to fishing a jerk bait. Let's start with some of your favorite jerk baits that you would definitely have tied on. Do you have a variety of different brands that you use, or do you have that narrowed down to just a handful?
I've got a variety of brands that I use. I've actually got, I don't know, 5 or 6 jerk bait boxes that are all just different brands. You know, I've got them separated by brand, but I throw a Smithwick Rogue a lot. You know, it's something that I think nowadays gets overlooked. It's hard to cast, but it's just got the right action and the right roll. And it just, I've caught so many, you know, true giants, you know, 6 to 8+ pounders on that thing that it's just, it's hard for me not to throw it. And then of course you've got the Mega Bass, which is, you know, far and away the most popular, especially around here. But there's a lot of companies that make a good jerk bait. For me, it all just depends on the roll. I don't care if it suspends out of the package. You know, I'm going to mess with that and change hooks and split rings and all that stuff to get it to do what I want it to do. So that doesn't bother me. It's just the action. You know, it's got to have the right action.
So let's say you picked up some Smithwicks. You took them out of the package. Are you testing them before you throw them? Are you trying to... Do you want one that truly suspends, or does that vary on what you're trying to accomplish with that bait? How do you determine, you know, what kind of hook I'm going to change? If I'm going to change the swivels, am I going to add weight to it?
So as far as, you know, specifically talking about the Smithwick, I'm always going to change every component on it. You know, they come with pretty cheap components. I mean, I can say that, I guess. I'm not, you know, it's not a company I'm sponsored by or anything, but I'm always going to change all the split rings on it and the hooks for sure. And I've kind of got a system, you know, certain size split rings that I put on different baits. But a lot of times what I will do is I will make sure that what I'm putting on there is not going to make it sink or suspend when I put it in the water. I want to be able to add lead wire to it to get it to do what I want it to do. So that's what I always do. I make sure that what I put on there is light enough that the bait's not going to, you know, when I put it in, it's not going to slow sink or anything like that. I want to be able to tinker with that day to day and throughout the day. Because, you know, you may go out there one day and they're wanting it suspending perfectly. And by the afternoon, they're wanting it slow floating or sinking. I mean, you just don't know. So I don't want to be kind of pigeonholed. I want to be able to adjust that lead wire and get it to do what I want it to do.
That sounds like a pretty serious system, you know, as far as being able to do that and making that call. How do you even, where does one start? I'm trying to get a visual here of all these jerk baits that you have in different boxes. And all of a sudden, for some reason, I don't know what is it? Is something you notice on the water when you think the bite's changing? Is it conditions? Is it because you spend so much time out there, you're really keyed in? Like, how would somebody even attempt to learn when to do what when you're fishing jerk baits in that type of situation?
For me, a lot of times it's just kind of getting cues from nature, from the shad themselves. You know, if you see a shad dying, if you can see how active they are and how well they're moving through the water column, as it starts to get late into the winter and the water starts to get really cold, those shad start to move very slow and they start to die off in large numbers. And at that point, most times I'm going to want my jerkbait to slow sink. Earlier in the winter or late fall, a lot of times I have them to where they might even slow float because those fish are, you know, a lot of fish you're catching are, you know, very shallow or they're suspended way up in the water column, you know, under docks or something like that. So I don't want to be working my bait below them. So you really just kind of gotta go off what you're seeing, you know, say on your depth finder for where the bait is. And then also just with your eyes, pay attention and see how lively those shad are, or, you know, if they're starting to die off or anything like that.
When you're throwing these jerk baits that time of year, what are you normally focusing on?
You know, that's a pretty tough question just because it's, you know, it's not always one thing. You know, like I said, this is a good lake and there's a lot of fish in it. So there's a lot of times where there's multiple, you know, quote unquote patterns going on at the same time, where one guy could come in with 20 pounds and he caught them all in the main lake. And, you know, another guy comes in with 20 pounds and he caught them all in the, you know, on the channel banks in the back of coves. So, you know, that one's hard to say. Typically, as they start to this lake, they do about a 6-foot drawdown in the winter. Mm-hmm. And until they do that, the fish are really scattered. Until they start to draw the lake down and the water gets cold, the fish are still back on flats and all that stuff. As they start to draw it down and the water starts getting into the 40s, those fish don't want to be on a flat that only has, you know, 3 foot of water on it. They're going to pull out to steeper banks, somewhere that they can get down 6 or 8 foot where that water's still in the 50s. And then they can pull up in the afternoons or whatever to feed.
A normal setup when it comes to throwing the jerk bait, as far as your rod, reel, and line.
I throw a Daiwa. It's a Tetsuo Elite, the Seth Fighter jerk bait rod. It's a 6'9", I think. Mm-hmm. It's a medium light. Throw the it's the compact Tatula SV reels. Okay. They fit in my hand well. And then I'm going to spool it up with typically early in the fall. You know, I may throw all the way up to, say, 15-pound test, you know, because I'm not really wanting that bait to get very deep. But as we wear on and through most of the winter, I'm going to throw it on probably 10, maybe 12-pound fluorocarbon.
Okay, so you're going a little heavier if you don't want it to fall as much or get that deep. Now, Smithwick, they make a variety, I guess, of different jerk baits. Are you using some of the deeper ones as well? Do you experiment with those? I can't think of the names right now. Is it like
they've got the they've got the Spoonbill Rogue and they've got the Elite 8. I pretty much, as far as Smithwick goes, I stick with the regular suspending Rogue.
Gotcha. Okay.
You know, I do throw the floating Rogue, you know, like around the spawn and stuff like that when fish are on beds. But as far as like what people think of for jerk baiting, I stick with just the suspending model.
I'm going to have to circle back on that floating Rogue around the spawn. That seems a little interesting. When we're talking the mega bass, you know, of course they make the regular, the 110, the 110, you know, plus one. I think they make a plus two now. How about in that zone? Where are you looking as far as the mega bass lineup?
So as far as the mega bass goes, I do throw the, you know, the plus one, plus twos. They have a good action and they're easy to work. So as far as deeper diving jerk baits, mega bass is it for me. You know, there's a lot of models, you know, suspending models that go 4 to 8 foot, I should say, with other companies that are just fine. But as far as the deeper divers, I'm going to lean towards mega bass for sure.
Do you see a difference in the plus one and the plus two, how you have to work it? Or is it pretty similar? Everyone's kind of have a different opinion on that. And I'd love to hear your viewpoints on that.
For me, the longer the bill, kind of the lighter the twitches have to be, or it'll typically they'll blow out. So the, you know, the regular suspending models, you can work quite a bit harder, you know, harder snaps of the line. And the action's great. As far as those longer bills, they can blow out if you're actually working them too hard. So for me, with the deeper divers, a lot of times it's more of a subtle deal. You gotta pop it a little lighter.
Sounds like you're definitely in tune when it comes to jerk baiting. Is this something that you're gonna try to use year round as well?
You know, it depends. There's definitely areas of the country, you know, blueback lakes. I don't have just a whole lot of experience, but from what I've seen, even in the warmer water, you can still catch some good fish on a jerk bait. I don't know outside of that. I don't really throw one much in the summertime. I could see, you know, possibly in grass lakes where the grass, you know, tops out 4 foot from the surface, 4 or 5 foot, you know, it's a jerk bait is such a good lure for getting a reaction strike that there's probably not a wrong time of year to throw it. I don't know that it's always the bait to win, which is always what, you know, us tournament guys are looking for is the bait to win, not just catch fish. So,
yeah.
It's maybe not something I'll have on my deck 12 months out of the year, but probably six.
Yeah, quite a bit.
Yeah.
Now, you mentioned a lot of your events on that lake run in that springtime of the year. And obviously, we're going to be hitting the spawn during that time frame. A lake like Lake of the Ozarks, I imagine somewhat can be clear water. You can see some of these beds. Is that a technique that you enjoy doing? Is that something that you, how do you go about with a lake full of fish?
Right.
I can imagine you're going to pull up into coves and you're going to see a two pounder there, a 3 pound. Like, how do you go after the big tournament winning fish when you have a lake full of fish that you can probably see quite a few, depending on, I guess, the section of the lake on the beds?
When it comes to that time of year, betting fish has never been something I like to bet my tournament on. I always, around that time of year, you know, I've been able to practice the last couple of years quite a bit, and I'm always going to go mark big females if I can find them. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to try to find a way to catch pre-spawners, or depending on how late into the spawn, post-spawners, just because it's, man, if you bet your tournament on those spawning fish, you know, there's a lot that can mess that up for you. You better have a lot of them found, you know.
The floating rogue. So the floating Smithwick, how are you using that on some of these bed fish? Sounds like you're a little sneaky there with that, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. You're trying to expose me, aren't you? It's like I said, it's such a good reaction bait. A lot of times when a fish is on a bed, they hate having something over their head, you know, a bait over their head. They hate it. And a lot of times if I'm, you know, pitching, because I'm going to try to catch them on a single hook. So
sure.
If I'm pitching a bed with, you know, soft plastic or whatever, and you've got one that's real stubborn, but it's a fish that I'm going to need, I'm probably going to throw that rogue at them before I give up, because you'd be surprised at how uninterested, if that's a word, or disinterested, I don't know how to, but
sure,
fish can be. And if you throw something different in there, how quickly their mood can change. And that rogue is just something that can do that. It can completely change their mood. And whether you catch them on it or not, a lot of times it'll get them going.
So you might have a fish that you need, or you see it's the fish you need. You're pitching. We've all done it. We pitched at it. It's not interested. We can't get them interested. Your next tool on the deck is going to be that floating jerkbait and try to get some type of reaction and see if that fish can change his mood. And then you might just go back and flip with a plastic again and catch him.
Yeah. Yeah. If there's times where, you know, you can see if she's starting to get aggravated at that rogue, then, you know, next pitch in with that same plastic you were pitching, she eats it. You know, it's just one of those things that those bedding fish are so picky. It just really pays to have a lot of different tools at your disposal. And that jerkbait's just one that over the years I've kind of adopted and I like to throw at them.
What do you think makes you so successful? There's got to be big time tournaments with a lot of guys, a lot of boats showing up, a lot of pressure, and to consistently be right there. What's the secret?
Well, I appreciate that. That's kind words, but you know, for me, I think it's just, I want it. You know, I'm a super competitive person, and, you know, I grew up playing sports my whole life, and just, I'm very competitive, and I want to win. You know, that's just ingrained in me. It always has been. And, you know, I've not been in this game for a long time, but when I started fishing, you know, the guys around here are no joke. There's a lot of very well-known, you know, All-American winners and all that stuff. But, you know, even the guys that fish the Wednesday and Thursday night tournaments are very, very good anglers. And I learned pretty quick that they'll take your money and they don't feel bad about it. So I decided right off the jump that I was going to devote a lot of time to it and get good at it. You know, I'm kind of, that's the direction I'm heading. You know, you just got to be willing to learn every time you go out. And that's kind of maybe the biggest thing that's helped me is there are times where I get probably a little too stubborn. You know, I want to catch them on this, or, you know, I think I should be catching them on this. But one thing I always tell myself to stay open-minded, and that's really probably been the biggest help to me, is just being willing to adapt and do something different to catch the fish. If what you think is going to work isn't working, because a lot of times that's the way it goes.
What's a technique that you just cringe when you have to use? You know it's effective, but you just, I got to throw that.
Anything dragging. Anything dragging, anything on the bottom. It's just not my forte. I'm a little too ADD for that, I guess. But, you know, I just can't stand it. I do it, you know, and that's like around the spawn. You know, I throw a Carolina rig a lot, pre-spawn all the way through post-spawn. And I hate every second of it, but I just know how effective it is. So I do it.
If you had like a free weekend to go anywhere in the country to go fishing, where would that be? Where's your favorite place?
Man, probably Lake Champlain. I was blown away. That lake is a lot of fun. A lot of fun. I actually took my wife up there. It was our, it's kind of a work vacation. You know, I was kind of researching for the pro circuit, but like I said, we typically go up north, for our vacations. So we went to Champlain when we saw it was on schedule. You know, as soon as I launched my boat on that place, it's like a big giant shield lake. So it just felt very similar to what I fish in Ontario, just on a much, much larger scale. And, you know, right away, you know, we went to one of the first spots and that I thought looked good. And, you know, right away catch a 4+ pound smallmouth, and it pretty much just went like that for the rest of the trip. I mean, it was awesome.
Well, when you spoke about Lake of the Ozarks having so many fish and different patterns working, and, you know, someone can catch them on a channel swing or out in the middle. I think that's similar to some of these lakes that you're talking about up north. There's just so many fish and there's so many different ways to catch them that, you know, you can pretty much do what you want to do, whether it be flipping grass, frogging, or going out deep catching smallmouth. What lake are you looking forward to the most next year on the pro tour?
I think I'm going to stick with the same answer. I'm looking forward to Champlain, man.
Really?
I'm not looking forward to the drive.
Right.
But I'm looking forward to getting there. And, you know, is it going to be my best tournament? I don't know. You know, who knows? But is it going to be a lot of fun? Yeah, I think it will. You know, it's just it's a beautiful place. It's full of fish, beautiful country.
With that type of schedule, are you going to be able to still focus on your home body of water and do some damage there, or?
Man, not much.
It'd be tough. Yeah.
Yeah. I've had a lot of my buddies said they're pretty happy I'm going to go fish the pro next year.
Right.
But, you know, it's a bummer, but at the same time, I mean, I'm super excited to go do what I'm going to do. But it's, you know, I'm going to fish the Plains Toyota Series again. I feel like after winning AOY, you got to at least try to defend it.
Sure.
So we're going to do that and fish all the pro circuit, and hopefully through the pro circuit qualify for a couple of those BPTs. So I'm hoping to have a really, really busy schedule next year and not be able to fish much at home.
Well, that's my next question. Where do you want to take this? Is this something you want to do full time at that highest level possible?
Absolutely. Yeah. Yep. I mean, that's the ultimate goal. You know, it's just to do what you love to do and make a living at it, hopefully.
Great information. I know we could probably spend a couple hours just talking about these, you know, your jerk bait techniques and all that. I'm trying to cover as much as I can in the limited amount of time. We are actually going to take a quick break and we're going to be right back.
You're listening to the Smallmouth Crush Podcast. Don't rush out to the water just yet. We'll be right back after this break.
Hey, this portion of the Smallmouth Crush Podcast/YouTube video is sponsored by Monster Bass. What is Monster Bass? Well, it's a monthly subscription where they send you the best baits for the region of the country that you live in, tested baits that work, and then they teach you how to use them. It's a company I choose for my monthly bait subscriptions, and you can save $10 on your first purchase at monsterbass.com. Use my code SAVE10. Head on over to monsterbass.com. Sign up today. Don't forget to check out their tackle store on their website. They got a bunch of great products. One of my favorites, they got a huge selection of tungsten flipping weights, worm weights, punching weights, as well as drop shot weights at some very, very good prices. Again, save $10 off your first purchase. Now let's get back to the podcast. What are some other techniques, fishing Lake of the Ozarks, that you fall back on quite a bit? You mentioned there's a lot of docks, thousands of docks. Is that something you focus on? You also talked about a lot of brush piles, a lot of things being planted. Mm-hmm. How does that factor in?
You know, I try not to focus on brush piles much.
Why is that?
You know, it's just not my favorite thing to do. Now, pre-spawn, all that stuff, those A-rig tournaments, I'll definitely, you know, key in on brush piles and whatnot. But it's just not, you know, I'm not, like I said, I'm not a dragger. I'm not a slow mm-hmm. fisherman, so I don't like really working something through a brush pile. It's just not my deal. But, you know, for Lake of the Ozarks, something to fall back on is just a jig. You know, I've actually, company that I work with, Apex Tackle Company, they just released my signature jig. It's just something, and with the head design that we have on that, you can literally fish it 12 months out of the year and catch fish on it, especially at this lake. There's a huge population of crawfish, and they will always eat a jig on Lake of the Ozarks. And you could probably ask anybody who's fished here for any amount of time, one bait that they have on their deck all year, and that's a jig. Mm-hmm.
So you helped design that?
Yeah. Yep.
Walk me through that jig. What makes that jig unique?
It's got a head design that comes through covered extremely well. We recessed. It was actually a really big pain as far as getting the production right, but we mm-hmm. recessed the line tie completely into the head. And I think a lot of companies put a weed guard that isn't quite stiff enough. And we put a good stiff weed guard in it that it can always be thinned out, you know, if you're swimming it through grass or whatever, and you don't need that heavy weed guard. But the combination of the head design and the weed guard, it just comes through wood and rock and everything so well, you know, mm-hmm. just so well. And you can do anything with it, you know, swim it, drag it on the bottom. It's just, it's a really good jig. We're proud of it for sure.
Yeah. What type of trailers do you like to use with that?
Early in the year or in the wintertime, I'm going to use something without much movement, you know, like a critter craw or, you know, something like that. As the water warms up, I'm going to progress, kind of go through, you know, like to a speed craw when it starts getting into the 50s. And then as we move on and the water gets warmer and warmer, I'm going to go to something that flaps a lot, mm-hmm. Especially out deep. You know, I'm going to throw like a Biospawn makes a good one. It's called a vile craw, just something that moves a lot of water and kicks around a lot.
All right, Andy, a couple questions I ask everybody who's been on the podcast in the past. I'd love to hear your answer when it comes to your personal best. What's your personal best bass and where was it caught, and little story behind that?
Yeah. So, you know, it's, I guess, kind of that old story, but my personal best, we didn't even have a scale. It was a double digit bass for sure, but I don't know how big. And it was out of a farm pond in the town that I grew up in. I grew up, you know, just outside of Lake of the Ozarks. And it was a, you know, early spring March fish. And we had gone around the pond a couple of times throwing a spinnerbait and caught a bunch of, you know, 3 to 5 pounders. And then I went back around one more time and threw a weightless fluke and caught one that was for sure over 10.
Nice.
That's my biggest. As far as tournament goes, I think the biggest one I've weighed in a derby is 765. Mm-hmm. And that was actually on a wiggle wart, little crankbait, 10-pound test.
We didn't even talk about that, man. Isn't that like a standard crankbait to be throwing down there?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, nice. It's accounted for so many cold water fish on this lake. I mean, you couldn't count the number of fish it's caught.
All right, I needed to hear from an expert. You got the old wiggle warts, you got the new, the pre-Rapalas, you got rock crawlers, you got all kinds of them out there. Do we got to go on eBay and look for these, or can we get by with the you know, the one right off the, you know, the store shelf today?
So I got a kind of a funny story on that.
Yes.
A couple of years ago, I was fishing a BFL on Table Rock, and the co-angler that I drew, I was actually in a borrowed boat, the Phoenix Rep. Let me borrow his. It was the first time I'd ever had live scope. So anyways, I'm catching these fish cranking. And I had actually found a few with an A-rig as well. And the co-angler that I got kind of knew me or knew of me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm cranking and catching a lot on this wiggle wart. And he says, is that one of them old ones? And I said, no. He said, well, you catch them really good on a wiggle wart, don't you? And I said, yeah, I mean, pretty good. And he said, no, you catch them good. And I said, okay, well, I catch them good. And he said, well, do you ever throw them old ones? I said, buddy, I own maybe one of the pre-wrapped wiggle warts. He goes, are you kidding me? I said, no. And he goes, well, I've got like, I don't know, 50. I was, I had, you know, showed him that live scope before. And I said, here, get up here and watch this. And I'm reeling the A-rig through. And like five fish come up after it, just real slow. And I said, they're not going to get it. And then all of a sudden one shot off from nowhere. I said, he's going to get it. And as soon as those two little blobs became one, I set the hook. And he goes, well, that's it. I'm selling all those old wiggle warts and I'm buying live scope. That's funny. So, but I really don't think it matters even a little bit. And if it matters in somebody's head, then it does matter to them. You know, whatever you have confidence in. But I've caught a lot of fish on a wiggle wart and I don't throw a pre-wrap.
Green Phantom comes to mind. That's the when I was down fishing in your zone, that was the color of choice for me. I think it's called Green Phantom. Could be something else.
Phantom Green, and then there's Phantom Brown, and they're both really popular around here.
Like I said, we could probably go on and on talking crankbaits now with you, but I got to ask another question before we let you go. If I was to give you one bait to use for the rest of the season on Lake of the Ozarks, that's all you could throw year round, what would it be?
It's going to be my jig from Apex. It's going to be half ounce. We call it half the ounce jig. Mark McWaugh, Toyota Series tournament director, kind of gave me the moniker The Andy Newcomb. And so that's kind of what we went with. It's called The Jig. And I'm going to throw, if I got one that I can choose, I'm going to throw a half ounce because I can change the trailer on it and make it either fall slow or fast. And I can still swim it, do whatever I got to do with it.
All right. I'm going to ask one more. What color?
For the entire year?
Yes.
Green pumpkin. Yeah. Something green pumpkin brown.
No, I love hearing everybody's viewpoints when it comes to different baits. We've had some people, especially the smallmouth guys for season one, it was always like a TRD or a tube. Now that we're expanding and we're talking to anglers like yourself in different parts of the country, we're hearing a lot more variety when it comes to what is that specific bait. And the only reason why I ask that is it's kind of fun to think about, you know, what if you really only had one bait to use? What is kind of the most effective technique that you feel comfortable with if that was a real case situation? We've had guys say chatter baits and, you know, had guys say crank baits. So it's very, very interesting, but I think you can't go wrong with that jig. Wish you the best of luck when it comes to your season, this coming season. And hope you crush it. And looking forward to following your career.
Well, I appreciate it. Like I said, I appreciate you having me on. I had a good time. So,
what's a good way people can follow and keep up with what you're doing on social media?
Well, you know, I had to get talked into the whole social media game,
right?
And I've got Andy Newcomb Fishing that has a pretty decent following now, and I had an Instagram that I got locked out of and how to get back into. But so if you want to follow me, for sure, like my Andy Newcomb Fishing page on Facebook, because that's where you're definitely going to get the information.
Awesome. And as always, guys, until next time, we'll see you on the water.
Thanks so much for listening today. Make sure that you're subscribed to the show and follow us on Instagram at Smallmouth Crush. Also, the YouTube channel, Smallmouth Crush. And if you feel so inclined, please leave us a 5-star rating and comment with a review below. And as always, until next time, we'll see you on the water.